Welcome to Typology, the show in which we explore the mystery of the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. I'm Anthony Skinner, producer of the show, and we hope you've had a happy holidays. Heading into the new year here, 2019, we hope you're having a good one. We have a great guest for you today. But before we get to that, I want to read the names of some of our Patreon supporters. But first, I'd like to remind you about our Patreon campaign. Patreon is a way for you to support content you believe in, like Typology, on a monthly basis. For as little as $1 a month, you can partner with us to help us cover the cost for this show. Just go to www.patreon.com/typology. That's www.patreon.com/typology. And select the level at which you want to support the show. And when you sign up, you get a bunch of bonus content as well. So even $1 a month, folks, it's a huge, huge help. All right, I'd like to give a shout out to a few of you who have contributed to Patreon already. Kenny Hood, Kelly Messick, Amber Greff, Kyle Schrudelkamp, Hannah Pritchard, Roz Harris, Jerry Feaster, Edit M. Jonathan Becker, Jenny Gilbert, Sir Stephen Wilkinson, and Paul Middleton. Thanks to each of you for helping make this show possible. Hey, we have a fascinating guest today, Kirsten Powers, author, columnist, political analyst, USA Today, CNN, Fox News. I'll let Ian do the full intro, but needless to say, you are in for a treat. And now here's the host of our show, Ian Cron. Kirsten, welcome to Typology.
Thanks for having me.
So we're new friends.
Yes.
Yeah, we spent an hour together, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago, FaceTiming, getting to know each other, and it was a delight and funny and illuminating and all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of rocked my world, actually.
Great. Well, before we jump in, let me just tell people a little bit about you. You're an American author, a columnist, and political analyst. You currently write for USA Today, and you're an on-air political analyst at CNN, and I have watched you in action there, and when I say force of nature, this is proof positive. She appears regularly on Anderson Cooper 360, CNN Tonight with Don Lemon, and The Lead with Jake Tapper. Before she got to CNN, Kirsten worked at Fox News as a political analyst and contributor, where she appeared regularly with Special Report with Brett Baier, Fox News Sunday, The Kelly File, The O'Reilly Factor. You were at the New York Post. You were at the Daily Beast. You know, you were at the American Prospect. Here's something interesting about you. You began your career as a staff assistant with the Clinton-Gore presidential transition team, right? Then you were Deputy Assistant U.S. Trade Representative. You were in the administration. You were actually you included press secretary. Wow.
Yeah. Well, no, I was a press secretary on campaigns. I wasn't in the Clinton administration. I worked in the press office at the U.S. Trade Representative's office.
Right. Well, that's still pretty dang great.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing experience.
We're probably going to talk about that. You have a book called The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech, which I definitely want to talk about. And let's get to it. You are, and from our conversation and from, you know, just speaking with you, a certain kind of ambivalence about whether or not you are a one, the perfectionist, or an eight, the challenger. Let's talk a little bit about our call the other day, and it's what have been the sort of the what's been the ripple effect of that conversation?
Oh my gosh, I mean, really, it's been pretty intense, actually, because I had thought, so I discovered the Enneagram, I want to say maybe a year and a half ago, and really believed that I was a one. I actually didn't have any doubt about it. I was, you know, just positive. I'm very perfectionistic, and I'm definitely a reformer type. I'm always trying to improve things. And And so I really related to it, and my friends related to it. But then I would hear people talking about it, like Richard Rohr saying, you know, well, what were you like growing up? And he will talk about as a one, well, I was such a good boy. You know, I just always wanted to make my parents happy. And I thought, that just was never me. Like, I was rebellious, you know, and I didn't really, I actually always was sort of puzzled by what my parents wanted, right? I think the example I used with you is I'd come home with a report card that had, you know, 3 A's, a B, and a C, and my dad would say, what's up with the C? And I'd be like, but what about the A's? You know, and I just was like, what is your problem? I wasn't actually trying to get straight A's. I was trying to get my dad to see that his, like, value system was weird. And so that's not very one-ish, right? And so we went through, like, some other things that I did when I was younger, and you just kept saying, like, no, ones don't do that, ones don't do that. And so I remember when we were talking and you started, I could just see like the word forming eight. And I just was like, please God, do not let me be an eight.
Interesting. Now
I just did not even want you to finish that sentence.
Oh, so what's interesting about you, as I recall, like both your parents were archaeologists. Is that right?
Yeah.
You grew up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You obviously grew up in an intellectually rich environment.
Yes.
And you grew up in a family where every night at the dinner table, your dad made you, can you tell folks?
Defend my positions, yes. We talked about politics all the time, or ideas, or philosophy, and those kinds of things, but I was definitely put through the paces. It wasn't, when I was at Fox, I used to, you know, I did the O'Reilly Factor regularly, and people would say to me, how do you do it? How do you keep your cool? And I was like, because it's just like being at dinner. You know, I grew up in an Irish family. This is what it was like. It was, you know, and so I just am used to having to defend my positions under duress because my dad was a genius, you know. So, and my mother also, you know, was quite brilliant and had lots of opinions as well. So that was sort of the environment that I grew up in.
And how did that, I mean, how did that, you know, if we think about personality as disposition, temperament, so things that you're born with that really are not, they're immutable. You're not changing those babies, right?
Yeah.
And then the influence of family, culture, school, peers, you know, all and other forces. Like, as you look at your life, what effect did growing up in a home where those kinds of intense, I mean, I guess confrontational. Like it sounds like you were probably interrogated on the table.
Yeah.
Like, well, why do you believe that? And what are the reasons, right? How did that shape you as a person? Did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it? Like,
I think I did enjoy it, actually. I don't, and it's hard to know what, you know, the chicken or the egg kind of thing, because I had some trauma and my parents got divorced when I was five. And they also had a very difficult marriage. You know, they yelled at each other a lot, and it was, it just was not a good marriage. And so I grew up in a pretty tumultuous environment up until the age of five, and then they got divorced. And when people got divorced, when I was a child, well, first of all, nobody got divorced.
Right.
I mean, I didn't have friends whose parents were divorced. And so there wasn't this, it's not the, like today, you know, where people, the kids do therapy and everybody talks about it. It just was like, your dad's here one day and now he's living somewhere else. And that's the way it is. So it was extremely traumatic for me. And, you know, my brother's a teacher and he was a psychology major. And he said to me, he noticed, because he taught kindergarten for a while, he could always tell when the five-year-olds, when something was wrong at home, because they would become obsessed with justice and fairness. And that's my obsession.
Justice and fairness.
Yeah. And so I, like, everything I do in my professional life is because I feel if I'm speaking up or I'm pushing back really hard against something, it's always because I think someone's being treated unfairly or unjustly. So I wonder, was this how I came out? Was this the way, is this my software, or is it the trauma, or is it both? I don't really know.
Yeah. And I think there will always be an element of mystery and, in the mix. Like, for example, well, disposition and temperament, does it, are the influence of those factors always the same? Like, in other words, is it always 30%? Is it always 50%? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, how much is your the nurture influences? Like, so, and you know, just the mystery of the human person, like,
right.
Like, if you take a, you know, sort of a spiritual look at it, then, you know, to what have you been called to birth into the world?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
So that's another piece of it. Well, you've given me some things already to talk about that are pretty cool. But all right. But let's face it. When you look at your CV, this is what got me today was.
Okay.
You're a little bit all over the map. At least I don't know if you were the sort of the more liberal voice that was represented in these spheres consistently, or did you change somewhere? But you've been at Fox. You've been at CNN. You were at the Post, and you were at the Daily Beast. You were, right. I mean, you know, looking at it, it's like you're ponging all around. So can you give me some...
Well, so this is one of the things about the eight where I was thinking this, and maybe this is why it could be the social eight, the subtype, and maybe it's different. But, you know, eights are very black and white. They, you know, you're either with them or you're against them. And I think when I'm at my unhealthiest, I can be like that. But I think when I'm healthy, I really navigate well in different kinds of environments. And when people, what I hear the most often from people when I was at Fox and now at CNN is you're the voice of reason. You're the sanity caucus. You're the, you know, I'm not the black and white person. I'm not the everybody, you know, you do something I don't like and you're completely bad, or you do something right, you're completely good. I definitely can navigate in those kind of in-between spaces, unless we're talking about systemic oppression. Now, if we start talking about racism or misogyny or those kinds of things, then I will tend to move into closer to black and white, but still, you know, I have to say, I still will be, you know, not as harsh, I think. So it makes me think I probably have a nine wing, right? I think I can move into that peacemaker mode where I can be around a lot of different kinds of people that I disagree with. But I can, when I'm unhealthy, get into this really strident, zealot kind of right and wrong. So I can see both of them in me. And I think, and I think that that's where the Enneagram has probably affected me the most. Mm. I mean, just realizing how self-righteous I can be. I think that's been the most painful thing is kind of looking back and going, oh my gosh. And part of column writing is you really do have to take a position. And so I actually have stopped writing my column as much because I was like, I need a break because I'm like the finger wagging, self-righteous, this is the way it is person in my columns. Mm. To a certain extent, you kind of have to be, but I take to the next level. And I just was kind of like, can I just have a do-over? You know, can I just like, unfortunately I can't, you know, cause it's all like on the internet.
Right.
So it's like, you know, and, but it's just, you want to say like, can we just like take to this and like start over? Because this is not, this is not who I want to be. And I'm like embarrassed, you know, I'm embarrassed that I couldn't see that I was doing it.
So one of the most enlightening and really great experiences I ever had was when we started the Typology podcast. I had never listened to myself speak for 30 minutes. And who does, right? No one ever tapes a conversation that you're in, right? Unless you're doing this sort of thing. And I remember listening back to the first episode and going, oh my gosh, I can be such a jerk. Like, and it would go in and out of like, being snarky, kind of the New York kid that, you know, interrupting people and finishing sentences. I mean, just went on and on. And then there would be these sort of glimmering moments of a guy that I really liked. And I remember thinking, well, who do you want to be, bro? It's like, you know, like, I had no idea that's how I came across.
Yeah.
And
I know. And I think that I think this might be an eight thing, you'll have to tell me, is that I'm always surprised at how upset people get. You know, I'm kind of like, well, I mean, yeah, okay, so it was a little tough, but like, it's just a column, right? Like, so why are you putting so much into it? It's just a snapshot in time, you know, or I'll feel like, you know, you're caricaturing what I said. Like, I, you know, I think other things too, but like I should be thinking about that when I'm writing the column, but I wasn't. You know, I was just more like putting it out there, and if people didn't like it, it'd be like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you? Because that's just how I am. I don't really, that's another thing about eights that I don't relate to. I don't hold grudges. I never have. It's not, I can be friendly with people who've attacked me. I'm just not, so to me, I don't get attached to stuff like this that much. And so I'll always be surprised, you know, when people will be like, remember something I said 6 months ago on TV. And I'll be like, what? I don't even remember that happening.
Yeah, well, let's just hit that for a second, because actually it's ones who would be, who would not forget, and who would be more, have trouble forgiving. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, what ones require when people piss them off or betray them or whatever, they need a heartfelt, honest apology, and then they can let it go. But but if they don't get it, they really hold on to it. Now, for an eight, they're like, they get into some heated argument or something, or you know, state of position that's pretty intense, and they can walk away and just be like, okay, that's done, and then they walk away. Ones don't do that. And for eights, I would say, only when they get really unhealthy. And when they get really unhealthy, it gets vengeful. It's like, you know.
See, I don't relate to, I didn't relate to that, that kind of like, if you wrong me, I'll get you. And I've never seen it. I've seen it, people will be like, oh, that's so great because you're so forgiving. It's like, no, I'm just too lazy.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, like, it's not a, like, I'm so evolved thing. It's just like, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna, it's just, I don't have time.
Yeah, so, you know, like, right, you don't have time. And so you can shrug it off. You can be like, well, I don't know. I don't even remember that conversation, right? That was so, in your eyes, so damaging. And that's more eight-ish than a one.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember it. I mean, it happened like 6 months ago. I ran into somebody with a friend of mine. And we were, I was talking, and the friend wasn't, my friend wasn't saying much. And when the person walked away, he said, I don't understand, why are you being so nice to him after he, what he did to you? I'm never going to forgive him. And I'm like, what did he do to me? I don't, I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then he told me, and I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. I just.
Right. So yeah, the one would remember, and it would require the other to really come out and ask their forgiveness. And they'd have to really own the whole thing, right? So Kirsten, on all these shows, from the O'Reilly Factor to Anderson Cooper, which, if did you ever do these on the same day?
No, because I was, you have to, I was working for Fox, so I was under contract with Fox, so I could only do Fox, and now I'm under contract with CNN, so I can only do CNN.
Okay, so were you once a conservative and then became liberal, or were you?
No, I was the left of center voice at Fox.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I was, you know, when I was growing up, I was always, I'm from a very Democratic family. I worked in the Clinton administration as a political appointee. I worked in Democratic politics. So that was sort of the first, you know, part of my career. I was very in that tribe, totally committed. Republicans were bad. Democrats were good. That was kind of my worldview. I had Republican friends, but, you know, in terms of ideas, I was like, I was a little black and white about it. Then I kind of burnt out, and I ended up starting to really reconsider a lot of this, and I think I became a more like open-minded, you know, Democrat or left of center person. I think people think that I got conservative because I wrote a book about, you know, liberals ruining free speech, but the whole book was based on a liberal perspective, you know, on the idea that free speech is a fundamentally liberal value. And you know, and a lot of the people I talk about in the book are liberals who are being silenced. So it wasn't actually just about defending conservatives. So, yeah, so no, I never became conservative. I think I just became more fair-minded, maybe.
Right.
You know, like I just became more, you know, these are good people who have different ideas, and it's not what I think, but it's fine.
Boy, we could use a little bit more of that these days, right? By the way, and I want every Typology listener, if you get a chance to see this, but Kirsten, I wonder if you saw it, the Munk debates, M-U-N-K, and the one between, it was on political correctness. And on on one side, you had Jordan Peterson and Stephen Fry, who were toward, you know, political correctness. And on the other side, you have Michelle Goldberg and Eric Dyson. And I'll tell you, if you want to see a really brilliant but also getting personal kind of a debate, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I'll check it out. Yeah.
It'll also show you how divided we are at the present moment. So, so I want to know about, you can help me solve a mystery. So if you had to describe Bill Clinton's personality, how would you, in a couple of sentences, tell me what he was like?
Well, I didn't know him well. I mean, I wasn't working in the West Wing.
Right.
But when I was around him, he's, you know, extremely charismatic. I found him to, so it's interesting. I've heard you talk about him on other podcasts that you don't think he's a three.
Well, I'm torn. You know what I mean?
Because he seems like a three to me. He seems like somebody who, you know, I mean, he's obviously very empathetic. I think he's probably much more emotional, you know, and, you know, even, you know, when he lost the governor's race, he was, you know, on the floor crying for days and Hillary had to kind of pick him up, kind of, you know what I mean? So there's that definite, like, intense emotional, I mean, he obviously has self control issues and on all sorts of levels. So yeah, I think, you know, he's very brilliant, but I think he's just complicated. You know, I didn't know him well enough to, to know, to give you any insight in his personality. I could just say he was somebody who always wanted attention. That's the thing that struck me, you know, or if you're in a conversation with him at a cocktail party or something, you know, which I was one time after, right after he left office, it just was all about him.
Right. Well,
now I know people would say he makes you feel like you're the center of things, but you know, it was very much, I don't know. He just seemed like somebody who was always kind of trying to impress other people. That was my take on him.
All right. Well, the mystery remains, people. I mean, and as you said, by the way, you know, people are complicated and you know, it goes to show, you know, people can exhibit behaviors that look like a type, but you can't determine the type on those behaviors. You really got to dig down into what's driving them. Why was he empathetic? You know, just because he was doesn't mean, you know, fours are the most empathetic number on the Enneagram. Doesn't make him a four. It's why was he, in service to what end? Okay, let's get to ones and eights, because I want to help you kind of really land on something, and maybe you can take an inventory as I sort of describe those differences. I think a lot of our listeners probably are in the same boat as you, or have been, or know someone in that boat. So you're both in the instinctive or the gut triad. So that means you both are pretty strong-willed. You're action-oriented, and you really have ideas about what's the right thing to do, you know, or how are things supposed to get done? I would say that ones with anger, it's really from the standpoint of like this moral, principled, ethical kind of thing. It's like, this is wrong. This is like ethically, morally wrong. And they'll try to persuade people with a logical argument about the soundness of their views, and then they'll get pissy and a little less logical when people resist their line of thinking, because it's like, well, you know, there's two right ways to do things, right? The wrong way and my way, right? And so they're both of you guys, if you're ones and eights, are black and white thinkers, you know? And so eights, on the other hand, like, they tend to rely on self-confidence and gusto and energy like that to sway other people, sometimes force, a little bit more force. Where ones will try to convert, eights use power to get through to people, you know? And I'd say the greatest misunderstanding between these two types is about justice. That justice is an extremely important value to both. But I'd say that, you know, for the two of them, like, well, for eights, I would say, it's like, it's just a reaction. It's like from the hip, man. It's like a from the hip reaction. They just would, they see injustice or unfairness, they just go at it. There's not a lot of logical reasoning. You know, it's more like, yeah, this is wrong. I got to settle this. They don't like bullies. You know, they just don't like bullies. And they're perfectly fine going up against power. They have no problem doing that. But they're going to go at it in a less measured way, less surgically than a one would. So which one of those two do you identify with more?
Much more the one.
All right. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm very logical, very like, and if you were to watch me, you know, even like Bill O'Reilly is like screaming at me, I'm just talking just like I'm talking right now. I'm just very like, no, that's not logical. That doesn't make sense. Like da, 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 da. And in fact, I mean, it's a complaint of my fiance is when we argue that I'm cold, that I'm, you know, that I'm looking at him in a judgy way because he's lost his temper or he's, you know, being too emotional, that I'm actually not thinking that, but that's my vibe. I'm just trying to understand what's going on and I'm trying to like be logical, you know, I'm mm-hmm. trying to say, well, whoa, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I'm frequently accused of being prosecutorial. you know, what I'm actually doing is just trying to understand. I'm just trying to be like, something's not right. I'm trying to get this. Like, this isn't logical. I'm very rational, right? I just, I'm probably overly rational. So, yeah. So in that, I definitely feel like, and I tried, so one of the things we talked about was there's the me today, and then there's the me, young me, and they're not the same.
Thank goodness, so, right? Thank goodness for all of us if that's the
case.
Yeah,
but I think, you know, I think when I was younger, maybe I did more the eight thing. Mm-hmm. I think I was more dominating and then just trying to push through and get people to see what, but it was, I also think when I was younger, and I think this is just a youth thing to a certain extent, I kind of did need them to agree with me. I don't now. Like, I'm not really, most of my debating is to try to understand what they think and to try to tease out what I think. But in the end, if they don't agree with me, I'm kind of over that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, people are just going to believe what they're going to believe and I can kind of do my best. But, and then there's also the big difference between how I am relationally and how I am professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to say, you know, for me, kind of my motto is, you know, I'd rather be happy than right. When I was younger, I wouldn't even have understood the question because I would have been like, of course I want to be right. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I mean, like, what a silly question. But through life, I've kind of been like, in my personal life, I want to be happy more than I want to be right. I think in my professional life, I want to be right more than I want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because what I'm trying to be right about isn't about me.
Right.
You know, it's about systemic racism. It's about white privilege. It's about misogyny. It's about whatever. So it's like, I feel like I am more likely in that scenario to really try to convince people using logic.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know I sometimes can say things that are shocking to people, and I'm always shocked that they're shocked.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed part one of our two-part series with Kirsten Powers. Be sure to tune in next week for part two. And until then, have a wonderful week.